It's Cinemassacre's Audio Slaughter. This is James Rolfe. I'm here with my wife, who we shall call Mrs.
Hello again.
Yes. Welcome to the psychoholic world of cosmic monsters, demon warpeds, SS whores, and devil machines. It's the world of Rob Zombie, film director, illustrator, and all-around Renaissance rocker. He was the frontman of the band White Zombie and currently solo artist. He always experimented with his music, fueled by his love of horror movies, and took his live shows to a high level of production and theatrics. So let's go into the dark, yet comical, creepy and fun world of Rob Zombie. Alright, so we have a baby coming any day now.
Yeah, hopefully I don't give birth during this podcast.
Yeah, and we were talking about doing Rob Zombie for a while now. We always decided that would be our next one.
Yeah.
And I knew we had the new movie coming out, Lords of Salem, which we didn't get a chance to see, and we're not going to see it, I don't think, until it comes out on DVD because of the baby and everything. It's, you know. But then, out of nowhere, and I don't know what it was, like, I usually keep up with all the artists that I'm interested in,
mm-hmm.
and it just so happened that on Tuesday, I was like, okay, I'll start writing my Rob Zombie notes. And I'm like, okay, well, let me go to the website and see what's new, see if he's got anything. Maybe he's working on a new album or something. And then there's a new album.
Yeah.
And it just came out that same day. So we're like, okay, well, let's take a day now and hear the new album. And that's the way Rob Zombie always is. It always seems to happen, like, all at once. Like, there's the movie,
mm-hmm.
and then the album. We had the movie on Friday, and now the album on Tuesday.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I didn't even know the movie was coming out until I saw some stuff on Facebook or something, like, you know, people talking about it. I'm like, oh, look at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I knew about it, but I just forgot when the exact release was, because it was playing in film festivals for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot going on with, you know, music this past week, it seems. A lot of interesting things that caught my attention.
Yeah, and considering what we've got going on, we've been kind of keeping up as much as we possibly can.
As much as we can. But last Tuesday, there was a new Ghost album.
Yeah.
And I can't pronounce half the names of the songs on it, but it's awesome. It's one of the, it's like the most I've obsessed over an album in a while. I've just listened to it and repeat over and over again.
Yeah, I had it in my head this morning, so you know that's a good sign.
And then new Black Sabbath song on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, that just blew me away. I mean, what I feel about the new song and what I think about it are two different things.
Deep.
What?
That's a deep thought.
It is. I could probably spend the whole podcast talking about the song just because I'm legitimately obsessed with Black Sabbath and always have been. But I've been waiting for this new album from Sabbath for a long, long time. Since 1998, that's when I got into them, when they released the Reunion Live album. But anyway, I've been waiting for this album. It'll be their first album with Ozzy singing since 1978. And I've been anticipating this album for so long that what I feel about it is just simply, holy shit, it's a new Black Sabbath song. Like, I'm not really in a critical mood. If I was to you know, criticize it a bit, all I can say is it's a 9-minute song. In the first 6 minutes, the main verse is mediocre. The chorus is okay. The riffing in between is pretty cool. And then the last 3 minutes is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just blew me away and reminded me of how much of why I love Sabbath so much in the first place.
Yeah, I agree.
Then, okay, the Rolling Stones concert went on sale recently, and that's kind of been one of my bucket list bands. I mean, when are you going to get a chance to see the Rolling Stones again? I think there was some kind of conspiracy with that concert for some reason. Well, first of all, it was the first concert that came to one of the stadiums, the center, whatever. I guess it's Wachovia Center now.
At this point.
Changed his name 1,000 times, but that was always kind of a Philadelphia tradition. It's South Philly. You go to the concert, and then afterwards, you line up at Pat's Steaks.
Yeah.
Get a cheesesteak. You know, it's like
it's on our side of the river.
Yeah, but nowadays, ever since they knocked down the Spectrum, nothing's been coming to the center
Disney
now.
Disney on Ice or something is like the only thing that
Britney Spears or something like that. So every concert, you have to go across the bridge to see it at the shit center. I believe it's the Susquehanna Center currently.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, not to get into a whole other topic, but it's just everything about, I mean, I've been to that place 1,000 times. I you know, I'm used to it, but it's just, it's not built the way a concert should be. Concerts, you know, at a stadium, you can all view the stage perfectly. There's not a bad seat. They figured it out centuries ago with the Colosseum, so why can't they, like, you know.
The fucking Romans can do it, why can't they?
It's just the worst venue. So finally, the Stones come to the center, and I'm like, oh, wow, finally. We haven't been to a concert there since 2009, which was Metallica. So finally, they're coming around in June, and I'm like, well, this is going to be great. I have to go. First of all, the radio stations seem to be very secretive about it. They talked about it, but they never talked about when it went on sale.
Yeah, no details.
Yeah, I found out on my own, you know, not like it was a big deal, but then it goes on sale, and first of all, the site won't load. I've never had that happen with a concert. You can usually get, you know, you might get bad seats, or, you know, but you could at least get onto the site and buy a ticket. The Stones was not the case, and then I found out how much they were. $150 for nosebleeds, and when you go down the levels, like, to the floor, by the time you get to the floor, it's like $600.
Yeah, that's retarded.
I'm sorry, but I love the Stones, but that is way too much to spend on a concert. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's current events. I guess we could do this whenever we feel the need.
The only other current event I can add is that, you know, we always talk about that metal show on this podcast, and they're currently in Los Angeles filming the next season. Which will air June 1st, so that's exciting.
Yeah, go for a live taping if you can. Those guys are
funny. Yeah, if you're in the LA area, that's a really cool live taping. I think that's all booked up by now, but that's really cool to see. And
saw the guest list.
Yeah, the guest list. If you go to Eddie Trunk's site, you can see the guest list for this upcoming season. We got Lemmy back. We got Dave Mustaine back.
And Rob Zombie, of course.
Yep.
And speaking of Rob Zombie, I guess we'll get on with it now.
Yeah.
So, how did you get into Rob Zombie and White Zombie or whichever it was first?
Well, this is a tough one for me because unlike most bands where I have, like, that moment I remember, I really just don't remember with Rob Zombie.
Do you know when it was?
Not really.
Do you know what his newest album was?
I know I was introduced to Rob Zombie before meeting you. In some capacity, I had a lot of friends who were into him. My best girlfriend, who I met in freshman year of college, is like obsessed with him. So of course I've heard him before I met you. So like most music, when I met you, I kind of got more into it than, you know, just a casual kind of experience with it. So like I know I'd heard stuff off of like Hellbilly Deluxe and everything, but I don't remember like going and getting that album or hearing it for the first time in a friend's car or anything. I just, like, I don't have that distinct memory for some reason. I guess the first album I really remember is Educated Horses, for some reason.
Well, that was the first one when we were together, so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was the first one that we were, like, anticipating the release of or whatever, but.
Yeah, like, together.
I know it's not, that wasn't the first album I've heard, but that's the first one that I can kind of remember looking forward to, I guess.
Mine is almost the same as Metallica, really. It's pretty much the same exact story, really. Well, I first became aware of the existence of White Zombie when the Astro Creep album was out. And I had no idea what they sounded like, but I was intrigued that a band would use the name of a classic horror film starring Bela Lugosi, because I was into horror films a lot. So maybe this was horror music, something, you know, to be the perfect complement to my obsession with horror films. And it's true, horror films and metal go together so well, and nobody did it better than Rob Zombie. You know, like I explained on our Metallica podcast, this was before my musical awakening, so I was sheltered from this kind of music. Not that I was forbidden to listen to it, but I was just never exposed to it, and it always felt like the kind of music that I shouldn't be listening to because it's not my personality. I didn't have tattoos, long hair, and I never caused trouble. That's just something that goes along with the bad reputation of metal.
Yeah.
You know, I heard More Human Than Human on an internet clip one time. It was like, I found a website. This is when the internet was in its infant stages. But I downloaded a clip of More Human Than Human, because that was all, you know, you'd be lucky mm-hmm. to get a clip of something. And I was like, this sounds really cool. And then when Hellbilly Deluxe came out, it was on my radar. I was like, yeah. you know, I was hearing about it. And I heard Dracula on the radio. And I was like, wow, this is really awesome.
Yeah,
I
got a lot of radio play, too. Like, so I feel like that's kind of maybe partly where I heard it, too.
So, I mean, I went straight to the store and bought Hellbilly Deluxe. And it was fresh and current. It was one of the, you know, it was really like the first time I think I got into something that when it was current, when it was new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did in the 80s as well, but I was a kid. I didn't really know what I was listening to.
Yeah.
The, you know, it was just like the time was right. The zombie wagon came along and I jumped aboard. And also that same year, when that album came out, I was building my haunted house exhibit. And mm-hmm. I had a lot of time to listen to music while I was building the haunted house in my garage. So while I was building that, I put Hellbilly on repeat. And then, of course, I got Astro Creep, and I listened to that, and then Les Exorcistos. So I was just listening to Zombie around the clock.
It's good Halloween music, for sure.
It's perfect Halloween music. Like, if you're having a Halloween party, mm-hmm. you know...
Yeah, we always pull out the Zombie for Halloween, for sure.
You have to. So what does the band sound like? How would you describe the appeal and the sound of White Zombie and Rob Zombie?
I think more so than, like, a lot of bands, Rob Zombie's music is a lot about mental imagery, and it, like, strings together a vivid, like, trippy mental picture. So it's no surprise that he's also a visual artist. It's a fucked up ride into a hellish fantasy world. Doesn't necessarily promote a message or tell a story or, you know, like a lot of music sometimes is like more lyrically driven and poetry. I just, for me, Rob Zombie's music is like pictures, mental pictures. It's like painting with music. As far as the sound goes, a lot of experimental, abstract stuff going on. There's clips from movies and clips from like radio snippets. And
great way he uses them out of context. Like there's in Welcome to Planet Motherfucker, which I love that title, there's mm-hmm. a clip from The Mummy where she says, "Must you open graves to find girls to fall in love with?" Now, if you see the movie, it's kind of like, you know, with the whole dialogue, it makes a little more sense. But taking that out of context, it makes it really creepy.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like the abstract visual thing with, you know, also some clear influences from dirty, thrashy metal stuff. There's a little bit of southern rock thrown in there. There's a dash of rockabilly. But the thing that
it's been
I always
going more in that direction.
Yeah. The thing that I always found really interesting with Rob Zombie's sound, at least, is
the production quality.
Well,
some of his albums are amazing.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is that it's almost danceable.
Yeah, it's kind of a hybrid of metal and techno.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dance. I just don't. But the closest I get is with Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
That's
really
like a show where I actually move my body a little more than just headbanging.
Yeah. Just really catchy grooves, heavy industrial beats. The recent albums have sort of gone a little grittier, you know, with less of that polished sound.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of progressed and then he's regressed. The lyrics are just a scrapbook of different horror clips. Like in Real Solution number 9 off Astro Creep, it says, who will survive and what will be left of them? That's mm-hmm. the tagline on the poster of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So it's all stuff like that. And what I think sums up his lyrics perfect, I remember an interview with Howard Stern, probably in the late 90s, I guess, and he said, you know, will you ever write a song about your girlfriend or anything? And, you know, and he's like, no, I just, you know, any emotions, I just keep it all inside, and that keeps me mean. So it's just, the songs are about nothing, and that's what I love about them.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was alluding to, is it's not telling a story, it's not promoting a message, it's not anything like that, it's just, it's a stringing together of these shit that's going through his head and things that stuck out to him and movies or whatever it is that he's watching and stringing them together to create some fucked up abstract, like, mental painting.
And the CD booklets are awesome. They always have this, I mean, a lot of the early ones, it was all his own illustrations in them. And it's sort of a combination of porn and horror. You'd see, like, a woman spreading her legs and there's, like, a devil in between. Just a scrapbook collage of horror posters and old ads. And actually, I really regret that. The recent album, I didn't get to see the CD booklet yet because I had to hear it in a hurry, so I downloaded it off iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And iTunes usually would come with the CD booklet. I can't figure out where is it, you know, like...
I'll have to
get the physical CD, too, just so I can see what it looks like.
Yeah. So I think bottom line, like the main thing that sets Rob Zombie apart is visual experience.
It is a really big visual experience. I mean, his music videos, you know, a lot of times are themed after a movie, like Never Gonna Stop is modeled after Clockwork Orange, Living Dead Girl, Cabin of Dr. Caligari. And his live performances are like the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's sort of like taken what earlier acts like Alice Cooper and Kiss have done and just taken it a step further.
Mm-hmm.
I think what sums up his music perfectly is a quote I saw on a White Zombie t-shirt back in high school. It said, "Ugly music for ugly people."
Okay.
It's music that doesn't care what it sounds like. And that's the feeling you get from listening to White Zombie and Rob Zombie. You don't give a shit about anything. Just fuck the world, escape into your mind, into a place full of monsters where it's always Halloween.
Yeah.
His movies, I mean, this is a music podcast, but, you know, what do you think of...
You can't talk about Rob Zombie without talking about his movies.
Because now it's something that goes along with it.
Yeah, so for me, everyone always wonders, you know, being married to you, if I like horror to begin with, and yes, I do like horror. And I like the, you know, the classic 30s monster films and that sort of stuff too, but I've always said Devil's Rejects is my favorite horror film. So
it's a good one. Like
that being said, I know I get a lot of shit for that, but, it is, Devil's Rejects is just, it's a fucked up, I don't know.
Yeah.
Mental trip that I really, really like.
And I remember before Rob Zombie ever started before House of Thousand Corpses, there was always this speculation as to what is it going to be like? Is it going to be like one of his music videos? And there's something different that's hard to explain, but something very different about his movies and his music. Like, it's two totally different things. You could love his music but hate his movies, mm-hmm. or the other way around, or both, or whatever. But the music always seems kind of like it's party music. There's something fun about it. It's dark and it's ugly, but it's also really...
There's comedy element to it a little
bit.
Yeah,
there is. There's humor. The movies, for the most part, are really serious and they're really disturbing. You know, in Devil's Rejects, when he has the gun to that girl and he's making her, like, take her clothes off and everything,
yeah.
There's nothing funny about that. Like, there's just serious, you know, fucked up scenes going on. But mm-hmm. there's sometimes really funny parts, like when they're talking about fucking the chicken and the tutti fucking fruity.
Mm-hmm.
He has these really talky scenes that few directors could get away with because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Kind of like Tarantino.
Yeah. I think that might be a little bit what gets me is, you know, like Kevin Smith's my favorite director and Tarantino's a close second where, like, I like that talky dialogue and stuff, especially combined with Rob Zombie's ability to make an image that is new and fresh and something that's not, like, so sterile. I like the actual picture you're seeing on top of all this talky narrative that I like.
Yeah, it's like when they're talking about something where it's not important to the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And that really works with Devil's Rejects. And I think that's by far his best movie. I think, to me, that's the only good one of his that I saw that I would say is legitimately good. I think his intentions are really well. Like, he's a true horror fan, but Halloween, you know, it was just, it didn't adapt really well.
I like
him. Yeah, you know, I like certain things about him, but now that he did Lords of Salem, I'm really interested to see that one because it's a nice
I like the branding. I don't, You know, I'm a big fan of, like, when a movie is branded well, and I like the branding for Lords of Salem, like, just the look of what I've seen without having seen a minute of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I just like that it's his own material. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, a remake of something anymore.
Yeah, I don't think Halloween had to be done at all, but I kind of liked the adaptations of it. I especially liked looking back to his childhood and stuff. You know, I thought that was a cool twist on it. But, you know, I'm not, like, a super devoted, like, Halloween fan like some people are. So I get why a lot of people didn't like it, but I didn't mind them. And how about El Super Beasto real quick?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The animated one that went straight to DVD. It's easy to forget about that one because it wasn't a theatrical movie.
Mm-hmm. And it was just a cool, it's, you know, it's another facet of this man's talents.
So now we're going to go through all the albums. The early White Zombie stuff from like 1985 to 89 is really obscure. That I actually didn't hear a lot of that stuff till recently because they just put out a like a compilation set called Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. But have you listened to those very much?
Not really. And I will say, like, as far as Rob Zombie's career goes, I don't really, aside from songs that I may have heard, you know, on mix CDs or radio play or having seen him live or whatever, I didn't really see, or I didn't really listen to White Zombie in terms of albums. So I don't know a lot about White Zombie. It's not until the Rob Zombie solo era that I really kind of know what I'm talking about. There are songs here and there on the White Zombie albums that I know and love, but didn't come to them via an actual album experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I'll brush through them pretty quick then. Like, you know, this was back when he was Rob Straker.
Yeah.
Before Rob Zombie. Well, his real name was Rob Cummings.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Rob Cummings is his real name.
Yeah. It's funny, though. Everyone thinks that Los Exorcisto is their first album because it was, like, their first one that got more attention. Mm-hmm. But their first one was called Gods on Voodoo Moon. And there's a song, what was it called? The first track, Gentleman Junkie or something like that, is really cool, actually. And then it starts to get really noisy, and then you listen to Pig Heaven, which is the next album. A lot of these were short, too. They weren't, like, full albums.
Okay.
There's Psycho Head Blowout, Soul Crusher, and they just got really, really noisy. Mm-hmm. And as they progressed, they started to sound a little more like the White Zombie that you know. They started putting in more samples from horror movies and stuff like that. It's just, like, you know how you imagine Rob Zombie with that really big production?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these just sound like they were done in a garage or something.
Yeah.
So it's true underground metal. But then Make Them Die Slowly, you start hearing a little more, like, riffs in it. It starts to sound a little more like metal. That, I think, you know, it was when it started to sound like the zombie that I love. It was still very rough. I think Make Them Die Slowly should be re-recorded or something. It almost just suffers from just bad quality, but the songs are pretty interesting. Then there's God of Thunder, which is just a short EP, but it's pretty good. Did I mention this on the when we did our top five cover songs? Did I mention God of Thunder?
I have no idea.
You know what? I must have dropped the ball because I love this cover. It was originally by Kiss. I just, man, what the hell was wrong with me? But anyway, there's so many great cover songs, and Rob Zombie's always done awesome covers.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about the God of Thunder cover is you can't understand a word he's saying. Like, it's hilarious. Then Los Exorcisto, Devil Music Volume 1. We're in 1992 now.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like a full-length extension of the God of Thunder EP because it has a similar style. I love the intro. It starts off with record noises and horror sounds, screams, and it lets you know that this is no ordinary music album, that this is going to be a sonic journey. And that's what a lot of his albums started to do from that point on. They would have these really great intros.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, this album has Thunderkiss 65, which is one of my favorite songs of theirs ever, but I just never knew it came from that album.
Yeah.
I just heard it like at shows and stuff. And
yeah, they play that one live. It's now actually, you know, a live staple that, you know, they don't play anything else from this one, I don't think.
No.
Not very often, at least. But this one just has really groovy riffs. It's very catchy. Some of my favorite songs on it are Black Sunshine, I Am Legend, and of course the opening track, which I mentioned, Welcome to Planet Motherfucker. Then they did a lot of other things that weren't on albums. Like there's a song called I Am Hell that was from the Beavis and Butthead Experience album. And I love this one. It really rumbles. Feed the Gods was for Airheads, the movie. That one's, it's okay. Children of the Grave, they did the Sabbath cover for the Nativity in Black album, which was a Black Sabbath tribute album, which is really cool.
Okay.
There was actually a second Nativity in Black. I don't think it was as good as the first, though. And then we're up to their masterpiece, yeah. Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction, and other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head. Oh, boy. What an awesome title. And this was in 1995, by the way. It was not 2000. But it was just when it was cool to call things 2000, like yeah. It's the future. I think it's sort of a joke on that.
That's funny.
So you're familiar with this one, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, again, in a retrospective type of way, I mean, I didn't really, in 1995, I wasn't listening to Astro Creep 2000, but there's some really great songs on there. Supercharger, Haven, Real Solution Number 9, Grease Paint,
yeah.
Monkey Brains. It's a great, great song. And, of course, More Human Than Human is a classic zombie.
Yeah, Supercharger Heaven gets me fired up every time I hear it. That's a song I could put on any time. And there's a lot of other good ones. Blur the Technicolor is really, really cool. And Blood, Milk, and Sky. Love those songs. What's great about this album is that it doesn't sound anything like the last one. And that's the mark of a great band, is when everything they do, you know, it progresses. You know, it's different. And Astro Creep sort of epitomized that industrial sound that lots of bands were doing in the 90s.
Yeah. If it fit well in its time frame.
And there's a song called The One, which was from the Escape from L.A. soundtrack. And this is one of my favorite White Zombie songs ever.
Yeah, I actually have that down too. I like that song a lot. And again, had no idea where it came from.
It's one that's easy to miss because it's not, you know, from one of their albums.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm Your Boogeyman, the cover they did on the Crow soundtrack. That's a really great cover. Then they did one on the Beavis and Butthead Do America, which was the desert hallucination scene. Speaking of Rob Zombie, you know, illustrating and stuff, like he did the animation for that that trip scene. And the song was called Rat Fink, Suicide Tanks, and Cannibal Girls. And it sounds nothing like any other song they recorded.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so mind-bending and trippy. And then they did a remix of Astro Creep, Super Sexy Swingin' Sounds.
Okay.
And I love that one, too. Like, I love, you know, hearing a different take on all those songs. And like you said, it's just, you know, like, his music's already kind of dancey sometimes to begin with. And this one is just all about, like, you know, if you're having some kind of dance party or something, put on Super Sexy Swingin' Sounds.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the
all
album...
your dance parties out there.
By the way, you open up that album and it's just the booklet inside is just all like just girls, basically. There's like nothing else. There's no information on it, no lyrics, nothing. It just looks like you open up like a...
Yeah, he likes his women's.
I believe that must have been the last thing that they put out as a band. I'm not sure what the last one was, but they were together for 13 years and then they just, you know, broke apart. But the drummer, John Tempesta, stayed with Rob for a while on his first couple solo albums. And this is where the solo career of Rob Zombie began.
Mm-hmm.
And where I am, you know, this is where I came in.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I have a more solid appreciation and understanding of the music in terms of albums and, you know.
Yeah, and I would split Rob Zombie's solo career into two parts. There's the dreadlocked Rob Zombie with the elaborate production, and then there's filmmaker Rob Zombie without the dreadlocks, going to, you know, back to a more grittier sound,
mm-hmm.
and with John Five on guitar, So it's literally a different band.
When John 5 joins, it kind of becomes a different...
Yeah, John 5 definitely brought more of a rock element to it. Like, now they're sort of a little more, like, organic now. They're just, like... They sound more like a band that's just, you know, getting together and rocking out now. Right. So you could prefer either one, but there's a very distinct, you know, split there. The first two, Hellbilly Deluxe and Sinister Urge, are very different from the rest that followed. The Hellbilly Deluxe, I think, is kind of like the undisputed masterpiece of his whole career.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely
actually
skyrocketed him to a whole new level.
I will dispute that, but we'll go on. Yeah, it just had a more polished sound. The production was excellent, and it was dark and evil, but it was cartoonish at the same time, mm-hmm. which is what he always does. This is also when Sherry Moon became the official Rob Zombie pinup girl.
Okay.
You know, when you start seeing her in the videos and on, you know...
Yeah, yeah.
The cover... Well, she's on the cover of the... American Made Music to Strip By, which was the remix of Hellbilly Deluxe. I thought they were going to do a remix of every album at that point, but those are the only two so far. But yeah, this has great songs on it. Super Beast, I mean, the first time I heard that, my head exploded.
Yeah. Living Dead Girl's my all-time favorite zombie song, and that's on this album.
Mm.
There's Dragula, which was on the radio. Like, even my dad knew that song. Like, everybody knew that song.
I remember waiting for that song to come on the radio just so I could record it onto a cassette, and then I played it on repeat over and over again. And remember I said cassette, I would rewind it about 20 times just to hear it over and over and over again. Meet the Creeper and Return of the Phantom Stranger.
Demonoid Phenomenon.
It's really a perfect album from top to bottom.
Pretty much, yeah.
And somewhere around this time, actually, this is just a side note. Like, I wouldn't normally count this, but it's just an interesting thing that he came out with this. It's a soundtrack to Frankenstein, basically. Although, it's the first three Frankenstein, the Karloff trilogy. But the music isn't isolated from the sound, so you still hear the dialogue and stuff. So it's just clips from the movies on a CD. But... It's Rob Zombie presents the words and music of Frankenstein, and you see Rob Zombie on the cover and everything, and there's like these notes on the inside. You know, it's actually a really great CD booklet. Like, there's lots of pictures from the movies in there and everything, and, you know, a foreword by Rob Zombie. But that's just an odd thing that came out. I was always wondering, are they going to do Dracula or you know, well, there's not really much music in the first Dracula, but like the Wolfman. But anyway, it was just one of those things that just like combined zombie with horror movies. It was just that he's very much, you know, in the horror scene. So anyway, Sinister Urge was 2001, and I was in college when this came out. This was just the perfect album that I needed when this came out. There is... higher production, there's orchestral sounds in it, which sometimes, like a song like Bring Her Down to Cripple Town, the orchestral elements are really prevalent in that one. But then there's songs like Demon Speeding where it just sort of complements the heavy guitars, where it's more subtle. It's in there, but, you know, it doesn't take the front.
Yeah. The intro to this album is, like, circus-y and...
Yeah.
And hellish. I love it.
Like, again, it's just an awesome intro. Like,
yeah.
From Los Exorcisto all the way to like Educated Horses are just awesome intros. But again, every song on it's amazing. And it sounds clean and it's soothing to the ears, but it's also heavy as shit. Mm-hmm. It's just never abrasive. It just has a great tone to it. It's hard to explain, but again, it's very poppy and dancey. Like, it has, you know, songs like, you know, Go to California and Never Gonna Stop are more poppy songs. And then they have all these guest musicians coming on and off of it. Kerry King did the solo to a Dead Girl Superstar.
Okay.
And this amazing, blistering solo. Ironhead, Ozzy guest sings on it. Okay. And that blew my mind when I heard it. I was like, wow, Rob Zombie and Ozzy on the same song. Of course, I had the song House of Thousand Corpses, and at the very end, there is a bonus song, The Unholy Three, which was a Lon Chaney film. But remember those days when there would be bonus songs? You know?
Yep. You'd be like, why is my CD player still running? Oh, yes, bonus track.
You forget about it, and it was cool, but nowadays with playlists and everything, now it's like, okay, that's stupid. Now I can't.
Well, now I have to skip. Even then, if you're making a mixtape, it was like,
yeah,
you had to get some actual cutting going on in there if you wanted to include that track. Or sometimes I'd be just like, oh, fuck it. It's a good song, but I can't put it on there because it's got a bonus track.
I know. Nowadays, that happens a lot, like unfortunately. There was a lot of interesting things that they did with CDs. Like, you remember Korn, their third album, Follow the Leader? The music doesn't start until track 13. And then Tool, Undertow, the last track goes up to 69 or something.
Okay.
Like, they used to do weird things in those days. But now that's just a lost thing, because it's like, now, you know, you have your...
Yeah, you got your track listing, you got your iTunes, you know exactly what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I particularly, on Sinister Urge, I'm a big fan of the song House of a Thousand Corpses. It starts to get that, like, Southern Rock tinge to it, which I'm a sucker for. Demons Beating, Never Gonna Stop.
Yeah, Sinister Urge was
some good songs.
Yeah, like, I thought, and still think, I'm trying to reevaluate, you know, but when that album came out, it was, like, my favorite album, and I felt like every album he put out just got better and better. Like, Astro Creep was better than Los Exorcisto, Hellbilly Deluxe was better than Astro Creep, and Sinister Urge was better than Hellbilly. So it just kept getting
crescendo for you.
It just kept getting better and better, and yeah, that's how I felt at the time. I mean now I look at things a little differently, but I think I still like Sinister Urge, but we'll talk about it when we get to the end of this. So then we're waiting anxiously at this point for his movie to come out. Like, wow, what's you know, Rob Zombie going to be like as a filmmaker? We already know how much he loves horror films. Like, what's the movie going to be like? So House of Thousand Corpses came out, and it was like, okay, it's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's weird. It's trippy. It's, you know, got some interesting characters in it, but whatever, you know. Take it for what it is. But this seemed like a transition phase. There were, before, you know, John 5 and everything came along, there were lots of loose songs and singles around this period, such as ones from the movie soundtrack, like Pussy Liquor.
One of my favorite songs.
Pussy Liquor.
Get fucked up. And yeah. Fuck up with you.
Yeah. There was a... Like, he did that cover of Brick House, and there's just all kinds of cool... A lot of these songs were compiled on a hits album called Past, Present, and Future.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff around in that time. But then, you know, the next album came out 2006. This was the first one of the second phase Rob Zombie, I would call it, where he doesn't have the dreadlocks anymore. And
I distinctly remember, you know, like I was saying... This is kind of the first album that I was anticipating the release of, and I knew you by this point. And I remember one of my best friends and I are fond of the looks of Mr. Zombie. We think he's a sexy looking fellow.
I thought you're crazy.
Her a little more than me, but we're basing it on like 2006 cut hair.
Yeah. Like, I see it now. But when you say, like, oh, Rob Zombie's hot, I think of this grungy guy with, like, an X in his forehead.
I remember you being like, what? Like, the guy with dreads and scary fucking face, that guy?
Because he would wear a lot of that, like, zombie makeup, like, literally look like a zombie on stage. But now he's kind of a little more, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just a different look.
It's just a little bit of Southern Rock look to him, like with the cowboy hats and the...
Yeah. I could get more into that too, but just to go into the album. So it's John 5, and then he has a new drummer now, Tommy Clafetis. Funny that Tommy Clafetis went to Ozzy, And also Blaschko, who was the bassist on, you know, like his first solo albums, went to Ozzy as well.
So Ozzy pays better, I guess.
I guess. Or maybe Rob Zombie is just Ozzy's audition. Yeah, it's like he just tries out musicians for Ozzy. I don't know. But anyway.
We got a little off topic here. But
let's... Yeah, so Educated Horses. See, this one, I didn't really know how to take it when I heard it. I do love a lot of songs on it. I love American Witch. It still has a good intro. It, you know, it's decent enough. Foxy Foxy is a good party song.
Yeah. I mean, it gets a little bit, like, more safe, if you will. Yeah,
but there's also really, like, gritty, heavy songs like Let It All Bleed Out and mm-hmm. Lords of Salem, which almost sound like they could have been a White Zombie song.
Yeah. But I mean, I really like this album. I like a lot of different songs off of it. 17 Year Locust is a great song. You know, the ones that you mentioned, Lords of Salem.
See, I think it didn't progress much. Like, every album, how I was saying, took it a step further. This one didn't really do anything new. It was, like, the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, you'd hear, like, it's the same tricks. Like, you hear, like, an audio clip from a movie, and then, mm-hmm. you know, it was just standard zombie formula. And I would say it almost sounded like a step backward, maybe a tiny step back. You know, and part of it may have been me. It just may be that, like, it'll never sound as fresh and original as mm-hmm. Hellbilly and Sinister Urge, because that's where I was at the time. This one,
no,
just...
I'll give you that. It was kind of, you know, more of the same, and it wasn't, like, taking it to a different place. Even though it's... I'll take more of the same, because the same is good. It was kind of that sort of...
Yeah.
That sort of vibe. Foxy Foxy gets stuck in your friggin' head. See, this is the beginning of, like, those really yeah. catchy-ass songs that get stuck in your head.
It is a really catchy song. And also, I remember a quote I heard from him. I mean, we'll talk about his live performances later. Like, I don't want to get too into it. But also, his live show sort of got stripped down at this point. I think he's done more theatrics since, but at this point, he did, like, these yeah. basic shows where he would just come out.
No, I definitely will get into that myself.
Yeah. Or he would, like, play in jeans and everything. I remember seeing him on Ozfest 2005 with you. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, wow, look, he's got a new band now. And... He yeah. doesn't.
I mean, I'll get into that.
Yeah, but he said something too. He said that he felt like things got so over the top that it became not about the music anymore, where it was too much about the show, mm-hmm. and he was trying to bring it back to being about the music.
Okay.
Which I respect, but you know what makes Rob Zombie to me is this high production yeah. and this big over the top show.
For sure. I mean, like I keep harping on, it's the visual experience all around. Like it's
yeah.
Like, Rob Zombie isn't Rob Zombie without that visual component.
Yeah, and there are other bands that have done that since, where that have sort of filled in for that. Like there's a band called Lordi, which wears costumes and they do this mm-hmm. amazing thing. And a Ghost we were just talking about.
I was gonna say even Ghost. Yeah.
Yeah, and you listen to Ghost and they have the keyboards and the orchestral sounds and it's like this big, it's a big sound and it's a big visual show too. So there are other bands that have been doing that.
Yeah.
So it's basically just a new Rob Zombie that I've still been getting used to. But anyway, the next one, you ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right. You sound like you're waiting for me to finish.
I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Hellbilly Deluxe 2, which was in 2010, by the way.
Yeah, this I can't was believe the, that's 3 years ago already, but anyway, go on.
It's just a title, but it is the worst title. It's misleading, just a misleading mm-hmm. title. It's not a sequel to Hellbilly Deluxe 2. Why would they call it that? Yeah. It sounds like a follow-up to Educated Horses. If there was a Hellbilly Deluxe 2, that would have been Sinister Urge. So, whatever, it's just one of those things that's confusing.
And for somebody who has such imaginative, awesome titles to albums and songs and everything, like...
Usually...
It just felt like a play, like, to get yeah. it sold or something.
Something
I don't know.
Was just weird.
It's off.
You should... usually it would be... Like, there's not a title track, which is awesome. Like, there's never... You would hear the lyric of the title somewhere... you would hear the title in the lyrics somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I think they should have called the album Cannibal Man and a Jungle Girl or something like that. Like, take it from one of the lyrics in the songs. But anyway, this is also the first one where he said it was treated as a band, where the same musicians that toured with him all played together on it, where it wasn't a lot of different, like, session guitarists and everything, where really, like, he said they all put the same level of input, even though it's called Rob Zombie and it's a solo band. They treated it as a band.
That's interesting.
Like a, the CD booklet was really awesome on this one. It looked like all these old horror posters. And he said that because the CD format was dying out, so they were trying to give it their best. Songs that stick out, Sick Bubblegum.
And that's got my favorite sample. Like I said, we all know how we're going to die, baby. We're going to crash and burn.
And how could you not love a song that just says motherfucker over and over again?
It's great live, too. It's an interactive experience live.
It really, even when you just hear it, like, you just can't help but just shout motherfucker over and over again. And the song What? I love that song. It is so catchy with the organ in it.
But Werewolf Women of the SS.
Werewolf Women of the SS. I love that surf beat going on in it. There are some good songs, but it seemed like the ones that they put out as singles, like What and Sick Bubblegum, were the best of the bunch.
Yeah, and our experience, too, was we were seeing them live right around the time that this was released. And I remember the first time hearing Sick Bubblegum and What were in the live format. It wasn't like a, he played them live and I just trailed off there for some reason. But it's a strange experience to hear a new song live for the first time because you got that, the way that they alter it.
But I think it helps too because then you get to hear what it sounds like in the studio after. One thing about the song What and about a lot of the recordings he's done lately is that I got used to it, but on What, his vocals just sound really scratchy, like that effect he does on it now. It's not like, usually he kind of has this gurgly voice. You know, he always put effects on his voice a lot of times, but this effect I just wasn't really used to. You know, that's just what it is. Overall, I like this album, but it's like, I like half the songs. Like, there still are a lot of them that I just skip. It's a shame that the singles were the best. So, like, the ones we heard first were the best, I thought. I like it about the same as Educated Horses, I guess. Maybe a little better. I don't know. It's different. That's the thing. It's just, and then, which the new one, if you're ready to move on to that, which just came out yesterday. We're recording this here on Wednesday. This one just caught me by surprise. I was not expecting to hear this because I didn't know it even existed.
Yeah, it kind of was like, I'll be honest, I've heard it one time this morning. I tried to give it full attention, you know, when I was doing other things. But, you know, it's cool. It's Rob Zombie. Yeah. It's nothing crazy. It's not off the charts different or anything. And it's a pleasant surprise to wake up one morning and realize there's a new Rob Zombie album in the world.
And I forgot to mention the title because, you know, it's Venomous Rat Regeneration Vendor. I love it because it's so hard to say and it's something you'd expect only from Rob Zombie. Now, like I said, it just came out, so it's hard to put an opinion on something that's so new. But overall, I'm really psyched on this one. It sounds similar to the last album, production-wise. It's got those scratchy vocals. But something about that, the riffs are really fast. It's very heavy. It's satisfying.
I dig the first track, the Teenage Nosferatu Pussy.
Teenage Nosferatu Pussy. Like, you know, you know what I do have to say? Like, I mean, maybe it will grow on me, but the last two albums, I really don't dig the opening track as much. Like, you know how I said they always have this great intro that builds up to the start of the album? These ones don't really seem to have much of that. But, you know, like, whatever. The ones I really loved were Revelation Revolution, that Ging Gang Gong one.
That one, I put a note that it gives me a vibe of a Kid Rock ball with the ball to bang to bang, diggy diggy.
Oh, a little bit, maybe. And then Rock and Roll in a Black Hole with that
Yeah, that one was synthesized. Good. I
like
that.
Yeah, that's really catchy. It uses a synthesized like drum beat, and then it goes into like, you know, like heavy guitars or anything. Mm-hmm. Behold the Pretty Filthy Creatures, I think, is the one that really got me excited when I heard that. That one just knocked me senseless. I listened to that a few times in a row. I'll
give that one another try. It's just really... I did like the final track, the Trade In Your Guns For A Coffin. That one's really good.
That is a good one.
And then there was a strange... I mean, I kind of... I don't know. Maybe I just need another listen, but I thought it was a little strange. The cover of We're an American Band from Grand Funk Railroad was just kind of...
I thought so too.
It wasn't first, it wasn't last, it was in the middle track listing, and it was just one of these things is not quite like the other.
And it's got like crowd noise in it too that goes into Lucifer Rising, the next track.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, when I first heard that he did a cover of American Band, I didn't think anything strange about it at first. I just thought, well, okay, he's covered Brick House and he's done all kinds of things, but something seemed off, and then I just realized it's his first cover on an album. It's not like part of a tribute. It's not like on a soundtrack. It's like this is on a Rob Zombie album.
And it's like in the middle. Like, well, it's like toward the end of the middle. I don't know. I thought his placement was strange. It's a good cover.
And it's not really a zombie kind of song. I mean, it is a Rob Zombie thing. Like, we know he loves classic rock and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's not like a dark, scary... It's not like imagine if you were listening to Hellbilly Deluxe... And then all of a sudden, Rocky Mountain Way comes on.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit. I love the cover, though. I think it's a great cover of American Band, but...
Yeah, it was just like, I found myself being like, this is strangely placed.
But then it hit me. Then I kind of realized, well, you know what? Like, these new Rob Zombie albums are sort of going more in the direction of rock music and not this industrial metal that, which was the zombie that I got into. It's just like it's going in, you know, more, even if you look at the cover, it has like this weird, trippy 70s kind of look to it. It doesn't look like a scary album. It looks more like a 70s rock cover or something. So his new albums are starting to become more organic. Like the drums sound more like real drums, except when they're intended not to be like on Rock and Roll in a Black Hole. Like, there's guitar solos, and, like, it just... The live musicianship's gotten better. Like, when you see him live, John 5 does the guitar solo, you know, in the middle of the set, and it's just a different Rob Zombie than the one I originally loved, but I still love it. Mm-hmm. It's just a different thing, and I'm still trying to reevaluate it, because then I listen to Sinister Urge again. Like, I listen to some tracks to see, like, how different is it really? And... That's the best way to describe it. It's just different.
Yeah.
And I think for the time it came out, Sinister Urge was the best one. But, you know, of these three newer Rob Zombie albums, like, this is the first one to make me kind of rethink it and be like, you know what? I really do love this organic quality of his newer albums. So I say this new one is a good one to give him another chance with.
Well, yeah. I mean, I never gave up on him in the first place, but...
A lot of people have, though.
Yeah, for unfortunately. Sure. And like you said, it's kind of a... There are two different eras a little bit, but they're both great.
Yeah. And
sorry not to elaborate much further on that.
No, it's all right. So, Zombie's here to stay. He's always going in a cycle. Like, there's always the movie, the album, the tour, and then...
Yeah, he's a busy fella.
He's a busy son of a bitch.
He's tours, he makes movies, and he makes music and repeats and is always doing something, is always somewhere. He knows a lot about a lot of things, too. Like, he's just a knowledgeable dude on his quest for knowledge.
He must have soaked in a lot of movies when he was young. I think I have read somewhere that he would watch like 8 hours of TV a day or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had to have all the references and stuff. And
all right, so now let's talk about Rob Zombie Live. And this is a big part of who Rob Zombie is as an artist, is his live shows.
For sure, yeah. And James has seen them an absurd amount of times, so I'll let him start and I'll just interject once I come into the picture.
Once you come into the picture. Okay, well, I'll try to breeze through it then. I've so far, I've seen him live 10 times. The first time was in 98 on the Hellbilly Deluxe Tour. The Tower Theater in Upper Darby, that was awesome. Like, it's an old theater, and I remember on the marquee, the other bands were underneath them. It said Monster Magnet, Fear Factory, almost like the actors in a film would appear underneath the title of the movie. And it was like going in to see a horror movie, except you're seeing Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad, I took my dad to the concert, basically, or he took me, whichever way you look at it, because I needed a ride, and you know, I was in college at the time, and I needed to get over there, and my dad always worked in the city, and I was like, you got to come and see this concert. And my dad and I have bonded over Rob Zombie since, and my dad listens to country music. Yeah. There's no way he would have ever liked that. And plus, he was even telling me when we walked in, he was like, I will pay you twice the ticket price if we could leave right now. And I was like, no, you got to see this. And we're in the pit too. And my dad is like, oh my God, like, why are we here? And then Rob Zombie starts. And as soon as he starts, I'm just like looking at my dad. I'm like, is this fucking amazing or what? And my dad was just like hypnotized to the stage. And I just remember seeing the pyrotechnics reflecting in his glasses as he's staring at it. And ever since, my dad actually came to more Rob Zombie shows after that.
That's funny.
Because it's such an amazing show. And the thing is, his shows were best, I think, during that Hellbilly period, because the whole stage was set up to look like a dungeon. It's just cool. You just see there's giant robots and people in costumes, which he still has, but his later shows are more about the video screens. It's just like,
yeah,
put up a bunch of screens, but then it was actually like a set. Like, the whole thing looked like it could have been
a lot of props and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It could have been like a Broadway play. Like, it just had this great, great production. Saw him again with Korn, and I saw him on Ozfest 99 with Sabbath, Slayer, Primus, and Godsmack. Boy, that was a great lineup.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I was spoiled then. I'd never seen anything that good since, I don't think. Then I saw him with Ozzy on the Merry Mayhem tour. And then I saw him again at the Electric Factory in 2002. Then I saw him on Ozfest 2002 with Ozzy and System of a Down. And that was when he was starting to strip his shows down more. Then the first one that I saw with you was in 2005. That was in Holmdel, New Jersey.
Yeah. That was an interesting...
Yeah,
like, because you were, you know, this is what, number 7 time for seeing Zombie for you?
Yeah.
And you were describing it as, like, you know, such a part... You told me the story about your dad and how, like, you know, this is just such a great show and it's awesome. And my first time seeing him was at Ozfest, and it was, like, real stripped down.
It was on the second stage.
Yeah.
I mean, who puts Rob Zombie on the second stage?
I mean, there's a lot of factors. I mean, it was the second stage. It was, like, 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It was hot as shit. I remember Rob Zombie saying, like, we need to do this in December or something.
Yeah.
Because I remember him commenting on how hot it was. I got sunburned like crazy that day.
Yeah. And this is the first time seeing him without the dreadlocks. And to me, like, a big part of Rob Zombie concerts was seeing his dreadlocks whipping around in a circle.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really... I mean, he's still, you know, he's running around the whole stage like a maniac, but it was just different. It was like, wow.
Yeah, it's like the only decoration-y type stuff he had were like 4 or 5 half-naked women dancing on poles. Was like...
Yeah.
There was no pyrotechnics. There were no video screens. There was like nothing. And this is like after you had just hyped him like crazy.
I think I already knew, though, that was happening, but, you know...
Yeah, and so my first experience seeing Zombie was kind of a letdown. I mean, the music was still the music. I remember there, like, it was in a parking lot on the second stage, so there was no seats. It was all standing room, and there was, like, you know, I said how hot it was and everything. There were these kids, like, moshing and bloody, and, like, you know, it was just, you had that experience, but Yeah. It just was like a kind of a total letdown, if you ask me. Yeah.
And that was with Maiden and Sabbath, by the way.
Yeah, and well,
last time seeing Sabbath, probably ever. But actually, you know, they're coming back to Holmdel, though.
I hate that place.
It's like, why not Philadelphia? Mm-hmm. But whatever, if you're near Holmdel, go see Sabbath this summer. No Bill Ward, unfortunately, but, you know, he's not on the album either. That's a whole other story, but, you know.
Yeah.
Then I saw Zombie at the House of Blues, Atlantic City. That was with Lacuna Coil. And then I saw him at the Spectrum. You were at this one.
I missed the House of Blues one for some reason, which is the same because I like Lacuna Coil. Yeah, so the Spectrum show, that was...
With Ozzy.
Yeah, that was great. That one was the first of my serendipitous experiences with Mr. Zombie. Well, first of all, I'll say it's really cool. You know, James talked a little bit about, like, the venue situation here in the Philadelphia area. But seeing a show...
How there's no concerts in Philly anymore.
Yeah. Seeing a show at the Spectrum before they tore it down. I mean, this was well before they tore it down, but... It was pretty cool to have that, like, you know, in my resume of shows that I've seen there. And then he was back to form for sure a little bit. As far as, you know, what I've seen, you've seen him have better live shows, but this was probably one of the best, you know, the video screens were up and the creeper was out and everybody, you know, everything was kind of more what you were telling me to expect.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And
he came out into the crowd, too. He, like, went around the Spectrum.
But before the show even started, this show, it was me, James, and my best girlfriend that I talked about who really likes Rob Zombie as much as I do, as far as looks go and whatever. Anyway, before the show started, I went to the bathroom, and I went by myself. And I came up out of the bathroom and literally walked into Rob Zombie and his entourage. And I just remember coming back to the seats and being like, I just, like, literally bumped into Rob Zombie. He was just, like, walking around with his security guards. And
I was like, why would he be, because I didn't see this, but I was like, why would he be walking around?
Yeah, it was just like, it was him with, like, six guys flanking all of his sides.
Were people trying to, like,
yeah, after I, like, came up out of, because the bathrooms were lower level, and I came up the stairs and was, like, not paying attention and, like, bumped into this situation. I'm like, holy shit, that's Rob Zombie. And so, of course, you guys were pissed and kind of didn't believe me, but that definitely happened, that show, too. And it was around the holidays, I remember that.
It was in also. January, yeah.
Yeah, so there was kind of, like, a little bit of a holiday vibe to the show.
Speaking of the holiday shows, you know what I forgot to mention just real quick was that the first time I saw him with Ozzy on the Merry Mayhem tour, 2001, Ozzy had the most just unexpected introduction to the concert, like the way it started. Ozzy didn't enter the stage; he came from the opposite side of the whole like stadium in a sleigh. He was dressed as Santa, suspended by a sleigh from the ceiling, and flew over the audience, throwing like confetti at the crowd. And then, you know, the sleigh took him all the way to the stage, and then he leaped off. Yeah. And
I remember you telling me about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think everybody should know that. That is a cool like intro. I hope there's like maybe there's footage on YouTube or something. But that was before nowadays when it's like, you know, cell phones and everything, where everybody's got video of the concert they were at now.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that was definitely the first of my good experiences with zombie shows.
Well, then how awesome, probably the best one I ever saw really was the 10th show, and you were at this too, the Electric Factory. And the awesome thing about the Electric Factory is that you can get close, like really, really close.
Yeah.
We were so close that I could read the set list on the stage.
We could read the set list from where we were at the sound mixing booth. We could kind of see like the backstage area.
I saw Rob Zombie on his way to his like dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I saw him walk out, and it happened so quick. It was like, you know, nobody noticed unless you were that close and could see back into the, you know, backstage area. Yeah. And then he came back and he was wearing different pants. And I could see Sherry Moon and,
yeah,
you know.
Could see Sherry across the way, like, enjoying the show. Yeah, it was really cool. I think we were on the side of John 5. So, like, he was, like, literally, you could spit on him.
Yeah, like, when Zombie, when he would come to the edge of the stage, we could almost just reach out and touch him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really cool show. I mean, obviously, given the Electric Factory and how small it is, it wasn't, like, pyrotechnic heavy or anything like that. But just the closeness of it and the intimacy of that venue.
It is. It's a very intimate venue. The sound is always good there. Mm-hmm. From the outside, it looks like just a shitty old warehouse, but you go in and it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all standing, but it's great because you
just... The waitresses are great, too. They always give you... They always bring a beer.
They are, yeah.
No matter where you are in the upstairs section.
And actually, one thing, like, that was the last time I saw him live. You saw him another time live without me. I got his autograph one time at a CD store signing. Back in 2002, I think, he autographed the Sinister Urge for me. He was really cool. Like, he wasn't just like...
I have another friend who's met him and, like, has a water bottle that, like, Rob gave him. Like, it was just, like, water he was drinking, and he, like, just gave it to my friend. So, like, yeah, he's a personable dude, apparently.
He seems like it. I mean, he... You know, at least then, I mean, he was really, really cool. I mean, he wasn't just, like, sitting down signing everybody's stuff. He was, like, walking around and shaking hands and stuff. He was really cool.
That's cool.
But the show, how was the show that you saw? We were going to go to the show with Rob Zombie and Slayer.
Yeah.
And then I had to go to Comic-Con. So, so at least, like, I got... You know, something. I got to meet another Rob. I got to meet Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, I think what your experience was definitely better. A private party with Robert Rodriguez is a little better than a regular zombie show. But
yeah, but I mean, I still feel bad that I missed a zombie show. But
yeah, I mean, the story is we bought the tickets and then realized the conflict that you would be away in Comic-Con. So well,
I didn't know I had to fly. It wasn't on Comic. It was like the night before, but I had to fly out there to like get my registration or something. So it was just like. It was just too tough to do both.
Yeah.
But,
and
you
this
know.
Show was also in Reading, Pennsylvania. So it was at the Sovereign Center in Reading, which is a little bit further away from Philly. And so we gave, it was me and my two girlfriends, and we gave your ticket to one of my friends from high school and didn't really see him much. He's the type who likes to get right up in the front. I only saw him at the end when he was covered in sweat and glitter. It's interesting. But this show was, like, strange for a lot of reasons. It was in Reading. It was kind of further away. And we had pit tickets. And like I said, like you said, it was a double bill with Slayer. So I'll be honest, I left before Slayer started because...
How could you do that?
I know, but given the experience, I had seen Slayer before. Given the time and the different circumstances, being in the pit for Slayer just was not like on my list of things to do for that day. So yeah, anyway,
I'd suggest that Slayer step back. Yeah, that's what I'd say. But yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I missed Slayer's portion of that night, but Rob Zombie played first, and it was awesome. And like I said, it was me and my two girlfriends, basically. And it was in the middle of the summer, and I was playing softball, and I had hurt my foot really bad. So I was, like, limping and could barely walk for this show. So because of that, we stayed kind of a little bit back further in the pit and to the side, which ended up working out great because we got to touch Rob Zombie that night. So it was in the middle of the show, and I just was like focusing on John 5 solo, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Where'd Rob go? I thought maybe he went backstage to towel off or something. And then I see this girl scream in front of me and point, and I'm like, oh, dude, friends, Rob Zombie's right there. So we went over and we all got to like shake his hand kind of, and it was pretty cool.
That's funny how that kind of catches you off guard when those kind of things happen.
Yeah, I was totally immersed in John 5 solo, and I'm, like, just watching him play.
So did he walk all the way around?
Yeah, like it was kind of like the horseshoe shape that, like, surrounded the pit is where he went, you know, during the solo. And since we were kind of off to the side because of my foot, we happened to be in prime location. So yeah, I mean, like, that, because of that, it worked out, but yeah, my foot was like broken, and it was also really weird. My parents drove us, so I felt like, here I am in my like late 20s,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like I was in high school again because my mommy and daddy were picking me up. It was like the weirdest experience.
Sometimes you gotta.
Yeah, it was because parking is weird there, and you know, we're drinking and stuff, and my parents picked us up. It was like, oh, girls, we gotta go. My mommy and daddy are here. It was just like a real weird show. James wasn't there. It was, I don't know, kind of a little surreal, but it was great. It was a good show.
At the same time it was going on, I was like flying in to like register for Comic-Con and having like this bad night, and I was like, oh, fuck, why
am I
not this
kind? I remember texting you pictures of it and stuff, yeah. and you're like, ah, grumble, grumble, grumble. And then, like, but, like, the next day, you're texting me pictures of fucking Robert Rodriguez, so shut up.
Private party with Robert Rodriguez. So you take some, you lose some. Like, I got one Rob for another Rob, so.
Yeah.
Now for a little bit of a rant, why the hell is there no live DVD for Rob Zombie? You know, there was a Zombie Live CD, and it was supposed to come with a DVD, but it never did. So is there some kind of conspiracy against Rob Zombie having a live DVD? Well, there was the past...
We're doing conspiracy theories today.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on.
There was the Past, Present, and Future compilation that had a DVD with it of his music videos, which was cool. That's great to have his, you know, his music videos on DVD as well. And then on the Let Sleeping Corpses Lie, the White Zombie compilation, there is a DVD on there that has some concert footage of White Zombie, which is cool. There should have been a live video when the Hellbilly Deluxe tour happened. So yeah. Why the hell is it taking so long? And still, I don't think there's any plans for it. And the shame is that because the Hellbilly Deluxe tour, I think, was his best stage set ever. If they couldn't even release that now because it would be in 4:3 ratio. Now everything's got to be in HD mm-hmm. and on Blu-ray. So they couldn't even do one of his, it would be one of his something recent. It's just too fucking late. They waited too long. So what I think they should do is similar to what they did with Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple, is do a compilation of live clips instead of just one full show. Mm-hmm. Have a DVD or Blu-ray of just something that does the whole history of Rob Zombie live.
It's really strange that there is not, like, because of this whole, you know, his focus on visual stuff,
yeah.
like, why no one recorded it.
Like, instead of another...
He's a fucking filmmaker. Why couldn't he just...
Yeah, and even if it takes out, like, even if he has to take a little break off of a movie, you know, the next movie, maybe, mm-hmm. to, like, work on a live... Why did this not happen?
Yeah.
And I waited for this for like years and years and years, and like the best thing you could do really is just, it's what YouTube is for now. Everybody just takes, you could watch footage from somebody's, you know, iPhone, but they can't release an official live DVD. And when I saw Rob Zombie for the first time at the Tower Theater, it was in late October of 1998. I would give anything to see footage of that show, and I know it was recorded. I know it was pro shot because there were these cranes with cameras. They played your favorite song, Living Dead Girl. Mm-hmm. They played the song twice because they wanted to make a point to get all the angles they needed. I've never heard a band do that where they played the song twice.
Where's that footage?
Where is that footage? I know it existed because I saw the cameras. It was shot.
Maybe they didn't load them.
Yeah, maybe they didn't, you know. But then, a few years after that, I was on South Street in Philly, and I happened to, I walked into a record store, and they had, like, some bootleg VHS tapes of concerts, and they had the Upper Darby show at the Tower Theater on VHS, and of course, I bought it. I went home, put in the VCR. I was so excited.
It was porn.
It was a blank tape. It was just static. So of course I went back and got something different, but I was so disappointed. But I know that the footage has to be out there. If anyone has any idea, please let me know. I would.
James will cut it together personally.
I would
release it.
Love to see footage of that show, because that was like a life changing concert. That was one of the first amazing concert experiences of my life. Like me and my dad going to that. I just wish. I mean, it's always in my memory. It's not leaving my memory. So it's.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. It would be great to have.
I know the footage is out there somewhere.
It's particularly frustrating that you know it's there. Yeah.
So anyway, what's up with the Rob Zombie live DVD? What the fuck?
What the fuck?
And anyway, that is the end. Do you have any final words or recommendations about Rob Zombie?
Yeah, and I think for Rob Zombie, like, I keep harping on how, like, visual it is. Go see a show, even if you don't know any songs or whatever. Like, I think before buying a CD or anything, like, just go see a show. There's nothing to lose except to maybe $50 or whatever.
And hopefully he does a good theatrical show, because sometimes it's stripped down more. And,
yeah,
you know.
Even if it's not, I don't know. I kind of feel like in this case, go see a show. I also, like I talked about a little bit, I find Rob Zombie to be very intellectually smart. Like, he's just a really smart guy and knows a lot about a lot of things. So I like seeing him in interview formula, too. So,
The Metal Show.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on
that
the metal,
metal show.
That Metal Show several times.
Which is always the metal show to me, because it's the one and only.
Yeah. So, or something like that, you know, seeing him in an interview format, even if he's on, like, I don't know if he's ever been on, like, Conan or Leno or anything like that, but he's a smart dude. I like hearing him talk.
And especially, you know, if you ever see, like, a horror movie countdown or something on TV, mm-hmm. and they always get...
They gotta get him out to one of the Monster Cons. That would be perfect.
Oh, yeah, like Monster Mania or Chiller, or one of these East Coast cons. I don't know if he... I mean, I don't think he has time, honestly, but...
True.
But as far as recommendations, like, the music, the trilogy, the classic zombie trilogy, to me, is Astro Creep, Hellbilly, and Sinister Urge. Like, those are I think those are his masterpieces.
For sure.
But, you know, they're all different, and you could, you know...
Get the new album, too.
Yeah, new one's pretty good. You know, check out the music video for the new one. It's on robzombie.com. It's really funny. It's really, really cool video.
Yeah, I still have yet to see that, but I have to check that out.
Yeah. But that's it for Zombie. I think now we're going to talk about the that Metal Show Top 5s. The Top 5 band logos. This is from that Metal Show episode 605.
My issue with the Metal Show list, and it's probably my inner art school nerd coming out, but they picked all logos.
Well, let's say what they are then.
Well, first of all, they picked all logos that are just based in font. There's no graphic design element that goes along with the font.
Well, I'll see what you mean.
I mean, except for one of them, but they're just basically, they're all heavy on font. Yes, they're very specific fonts that everyone knows belong to that band, but there's no, like, actual image or graphic design element. So,
well,
that's my beef with their list.
Well, they do. I mean, they do have things going. But you know, well, anyway, number 5, Iron Maiden. And that one, true, that is just, like, a font, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool font.
Yeah, and everybody knows it's Iron Maiden's font, but
yeah.
It's just font.
Number 4 is Van Halen. I mean, that has, like, you know, the
it's
symbol behind it. No, it's got the, like, the
logo that I thought they were referring to was just the V and the H with the two wings.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the wings. It's kind of like
the
pilot wings, kind
of. It's off of the word, it's off of the letter V and off of the letter H.
Okay.
It's part of the font.
Number 3, Metallica. You know, you got the M and the A that comes
same.
Out.
Yeah, same. It's just
okay.
off of the letter.
Number 2, AC/DC, and number 1, of course, Kiss.
Well, yeah, that's because they can't do anything without Kiss. Now, AC/DC, I will give, has the lightning bolt, so that is an element, and they actually make my list.
So what's your list?
This was tough, but I narrowed it down to number 5, Guns N' Roses. It's a very literal interpretation of their name.
I almost put that down, but for the top 5, yeah, I wasn't sure. But, you know, that is a cool logo.
But it's cool. It's guns, it's roses, it looks great on a t-shirt. Number 4 is AC/DC, which is on the Metal Show list. But that lightning bolt is just iconic. Number 3 is the Misfits. I don't really know this band very well, I'll be honest, but everybody knows that skull. And number two, the Rolling Stones with the tongue. You know, personally, I had an old t-shirt that my uncle had given me with that tongue logo all over.
I never got it. I was always like, why is it a tongue?
I don't care. It's just cool. I don't know why. It has nothing to do with the Rolling Stones, but it's just, it's a cool logo. And number one for me is The Who with that bullseye in the Union Jack colors. It's just...
Yeah. No, those are good logos.
I have some honorable mentions too, but I'll let you do your five.
Okay, yeah, we got a couple of the same ones on here. Number five for me was Nine Inch Nails. I'm not huge on Nine Inch Nails, but the logo, it's so simple, but it's aesthetically pleasing and symmetrical. It's just the two ends with the eye in the middle. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's just so simple, but
they were close
cool.
to being on my honorable mention list.
Number four, I have The Misfits, and it's all about that skull, which is from the film serial, The Crimson Ghost.
Okay.
But nobody would ever really know that it's the Crimson Ghost as much, because the Misfits kind of made it their own, where it's just, you see that skull and you immediately think the Misfits. Metallica, I mean, they've done some different logos recently, you know, but the classic Metallica logo with the M and the A that comes out, it just looks sharp. It looks dangerous when you see it. You just know it's a metal, you know, band. And they also have the Ninja Star thing going on, where like it has the M's all together. Mm-hmm. So that also is, you know, you could take either one.
They're on my honorable mention list.
Yeah. Number two is Judas Priest. I'm surprised that didn't make the TMS top five, but it's all about the trident.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the trident is the T in Priest.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I totally forgot that one.
Yeah. Number one, without a doubt, I think AC/DC. It's that lightning bolt in the middle. It's instantly recognizable.
Okay. Yeah, we had a lot of the same. Other ones on my honorable mention list would be I have Van Halen and Metallica, which are on that metal show list. I do like them, but I felt they were a little too rooted in the font. Journey has a really cool logo. I like that, like, it's a colorful, like, beetle bug looking thing. It's pretty cool. There's the Aerosmith with the wings and the trippy kind of font.
It
just sticks out from my childhood for sure. And Whitesnake, their font is like that Tolkien, like, Lord of the Ringsy looking thing.
Yeah. I liked that when I was a kid, too.
Those are my honorable mentions.
All right, so we're going to do another one at some point. We're lucky that we even had time to do this one, so we're hoping to do another one.
Yeah, I managed to get out of here without a baby falling out of me.
Yeah. Wow, things are going to get crazy. So, see ya.
Bye-bye.